Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today we're getting into something called motivational interviewing, or MI.
Right, MI. It's a really interesting framework for helping people find their own motivation to make changes.
Exactly. It's about tapping into their reasons, not, pushing ours onto them, especially when someone seems a bit unsure or ambivalent.
It helps them connect with why they might want things to be different, sort of finding their internal compass.
Which I think is super relevant for, well, for all of us, right? Understanding how people approach change or resist it. It offers like a way in without being pushy.
Absolutely. It helps you understand different perspectives, have better conversations about change, maybe even with yourself.
And it's not some brand new thing, is it?
No, not at all. It's got a pretty solid history. William Miller started developing it back in 1983.
Wow, okay.
And then Stephen Rolnick joined him, and they really fleshed it out more in the early 90s. So it's well established.
And backed by research, too. I saw something about a big review of studies.
Yeah, there's quite a bit. That 2018 meta-analysis you probably saw is a key one. It found MI often outperformed traditional advice giving.
In like 70% of the studies. That's significant.
It is. Especially, it seems, in those shorter interactions, like 10 or 15 minutes.
Which is often all you have in many settings.
Exactly. But, and this is important, it really hinges on the practitioner being skilled and genuinely adopting that collaborative, autonomy-supportive stance.
Right. It's not just a technique. It's an approach, a mindset almost.
Precisely. You have to really buy into the idea of partnership and respecting their choices.
Okay. And where do we actually see MI being used? It seems quite broad.
Oh, it really is. It started a lot in substance use, you know, alcohol, drugs, helping people quit smoking. That's still a major area.
Makes sense. What else?
Healthcare is huge. Helping people stick to medication plans, change their diet, get more exercise, those lifestyle shifts.
Things that are often hard to sustain.
Yeah, and mental health too. Supporting people dealing with anxiety, depression, PTSD, even weight management.
So quite versatile. Even criminal justice.
Yeah, in rehabilitation programs. And education, coaching. Basically anywhere you're trying to help someone navigate behavioral change.
Okay, so it sounds like there's a lot to unpack here.
Definitely. So our mission today, really, is to get under the hood of MI, understand its core principles, the why it works, and the actual techniques, the how.
Great. Let's start with those core principles then. What's the fundamental philosophy behind MI?
Okay, so there are four main guiding principles. Think of MI as client-centered, yes, but also, importantly, directive. It's specifically aimed at helping people work through that feeling of being pulled in two directions, ambivalence.
Right, that I want to, but I don't want to feeling. So principle number one.
Is express empathy. This is foundational. It means actively trying to understand the person's perspective, their feelings, their world, without judging.
How does that look in practice? Is it just saying, I understand?
It's more about reflective listening. So you're restating or rephrasing what they're saying to show you're genuinely trying to grasp their meaning. It builds rapport, trust. They feel heard.
Okay, that makes sense. Feeling understood probably opens people up. What's the second principle?
Developed discrepancy. This is about helping the person become more aware of the gap, the inconsistency between their current behavior and their deeper values or future goals.
Ah, so like pointing out how smoking doesn't align with their goal of running a marathon.
Well, helping them point it out. The key is that they articulate the discrepancy. It's much more powerful when it comes from them. It creates a sort of internal tension that can motivate change.
Right, intrinsic motivation rather than me just telling them. Okay, number three.
Avoid arguments. Or, as it's sometimes reframed now, roll with resistance. Or, perhaps better, dance with discord. Basically, if the person pushes back or seems resistant, arguing is counterproductive.
Because it just makes them dig their heels in?
Yeah.
Exactly. It can damage the relationship. The idea is that resistance or discord is a signal about the interaction, not just about the person. It means you might need to shift your approach, maybe listen more reflectively. The person has to argue for their own change.
So you don't push back, you kind of explore their hesitation instead.
Yes, you acknowledge it and explore it. Let them voice the reasons not to change alongside the reasons to change. And the fourth principle.
What's the last one?
Support self-efficacy. This is all about building their confidence in their own ability to make a change. You focus on their strengths, past successes, efforts they've already made, however small.
Like celebrating one day without a cigarette, even if they tried quitting before.
Precisely. You're nurturing their belief that they can do it rather than focusing on failures. It's about empowerment.
Okay. Those four sound crucial. And there's an acronym for them, right? RULE.
Yes, RULE is a handy way to remember them.
Uh-huh.
Resist the writing reflex, that urge we all have to fix things for people.
Uh-huh. Don't jump in with solutions.
You understand the client's motivations. Explore their reasons for and against changing.
Got it.
L, listen with empathy. Truly try to understand their experience.
Okay.
And E, empower the client, build their confidence, support their autonomy.
RULE. Resist, understand, listen, empower. Okay, that clarifies the why. Now, how about the how? What are the actual communication tools used?
Right, the practical skills. That's where we often talk about ORS. It's another acronym for the core communication techniques.
Aware. Okay, what's the O?
O is for open-ended questions. These are questions that invite more than a one-word answer. They encourage the person to explore and elaborate.
So instead of, do you want to change? Maybe something like, what makes you think it might be time for a change?
Exactly. Or tell me more about that, or what concerns you about the situation? They open the door to their story.
Makes sense. A is for
affirmations. These are statements that recognize the person's strengths, efforts, positive qualities, or intentions. It's not empty praise, but genuinely acknowledging something positive.
Like, you showed a lot of courage bringing this up today, or you've really been thinking this through.
Yes, precisely. It builds rapport and acknowledges their agency.
Okay. R is reflections. We touched on that with empathy.
Yes. Reflections are key. It's active listening, where you essentially mirror back or rephrase what the person said. It shows you're listening, deepens understanding, and lets them hear their own thoughts.
So if they say, I'm so stressed I don't have time to exercise, you might say, it sounds like stress and lack of time feel like major barriers right now.
Perfect example. Simple reflections, complex reflections, they all help the person feel understood and explore their situation further.
And the S.
S is for summaries. These pull together different threads of the conversation. You gather key points the person has made, maybe highlighting their ambivalence or reinforcing their change talk.
So like, okay, let me see if I've got this. On the one hand, you're feeling X, but on the other hand, you mentioned wanting Y, and you've already tried Z, something like that.
Exactly. Summaries help organize the conversation, show you've been tracking with them, and can serve as a bridge to the next step.
Okay. ORS. Open questions, affirmations, reflections, summaries. And you also mentioned something crucial alongside these, eliciting change talk.
Ah, yes. That's kind of the goal that ORS helps you achieve. Change talk is any statement the person makes that favors movement towards change.
So they're arguments for changing.
Precisely. Your job using ORS is to elicit and reinforce this change talk, asking questions like, what would be the benefits for you? Or how important is this change to you? Or what steps could you imagine taking?
You're drawing out their own reasons, their desire, ability, need, and commitment to change.
Exactly. Because when they voice it themselves, it becomes more real and more motivating for them.
Okay, so we have the principles, RULE, and the skills, ORS plus change talk. How do these weave together in a typical MI conversation? Are there stages?
Yes, there's a general flow, often described as four processes or micro skills. They aren't strictly linear, you might move back and forth, but they provide a structure. The first is engaging.
Which is about building that relationship.
Exactly. Establishing trust, rapport, mutual respect. Understanding their perspective, goals, values, using those OR skills right from the start, it has to feel collaborative.
So laying the foundation, what's next?
Focusing. Once you have some engagement, you work together to narrow down the conversation to a specific target behavior or change goal. What does the person want to talk about changing?
And this has to come from them, ideally.
Ideally, yes, or at least be collaboratively agreed upon. You might guide the process, but they need to have ownership over the focus. This is where developing discrepancy often starts to come in more clearly.
Okay, engage, focus then.
Evoking. This is the real heart of MI. It's where you actively elicit the person's own motivations for change, that change talk we discussed. Why do they want to change? What are their reasons? How might they do it? What are the potential good things?
So using open questions, reflections, affirmations, summaries specifically to draw out and strengthen their arguments for change.
You got it. And you're listening for that shift away from sustained talk reasons to keep things the same towards change talk? Sometimes advice can be offered here, but usually only if asked for and offered tentatively.
And the final process.
Planning. When the change talk becomes stronger and you start hearing more commitment talk statements about intention or readiness to act, you can move into collaboratively developing a specific plan.
Okay, like setting goals, figuring out steps.
Yeah, eliciting their solutions for how to make the change happen, maybe using SMART goals, maybe just brainstorming options. But again, it's collaborative, and you have to be ready to revisit earlier processes if their motivation fluctuates.
Right, it's not a one-way street. Engage, focus, evoke, plan. Now, you often hear MI mentioned along with the stages of change model. How do they fit together?
That's a really common connection. The stages of change model, or trans-theoretical model, gives us a way to think about someone's readiness for change.
Can you quickly remind us of the stages?
Sure. First is pre-contemplation. The person isn't really thinking about changing, doesn't see a problem.
Okay. Ignorance is bliss, maybe?
Or just not on their radar. Then contemplation, they're aware of a problem, thinking about changing, but feeling ambivalent, weighing pros and cons.
The on-the-fence state.
Exactly. Then preparation, they've decided to change and are getting ready to act, maybe making small steps.
Okay, gearing up.
Then action, they're actively making the changes, putting plans into practice.
Doing the thing.
Then maintenance, they're working to sustain the change long-term and prevent relapse.
Just keeping it going.
And finally, relapse can happen returning to the old behavior. It's often seen as part of the cycle, not necessarily failure.
Okay, so where does MI fit best within those stages?
MI is seen as particularly powerful in the earlier stages, especially pre-contemplation and contemplation.
Why then specifically?
Because that's where ambivalence is strongest. MI's focus on exploring reasons, developing discrepancy, and rolling with resistance is tailor-made to help people resolve that ambivalence and build their own motivation to move towards preparation and action.
So it helps them get unstuck when they're not quite ready to jump into action yet.
Precisely. It meets them where they are and helps them move forward at their own pace.
Got it. Now, are there any sort of caveats or limitations to MI we should be aware of?
Yeah, definitely. Like any approach, it's not a magic bullet. One key thing is it really does require skill and training. Done poorly, without genuine empathy, it can feel manipulative.
Right. Technique without the spirit isn't MI.
Exactly. Also, for very severe mental health issues, MI might be a useful part, but likely isn't sufficient on its own. It needs to be integrated into broader treatment.
Okay.
And it generally works best when there is at least some ambivalence. If someone is completely satisfied with the status quo and sees zero reason to change, MI might struggle to find traction initially.
Good points. It's a specific tool for a specific job in many ways. You also mentioned it shares some common ground with solution-focused therapy.
Yes, there are definitely overlaps. Both are fundamentally client-centered and strengths-based.
Focusing on what works and what the person brings to the table.
Right. Both emphasize collaboration, empowering the client, and looking towards solutions and preferred futures rather than dwelling only on problems. They share techniques like scaling questions or exploring exceptions.
So if someone's familiar with solution-focused ideas, they might recognize some similar principles in MI.
Absolutely. That focus on eliciting the person's own expertise, resources, and goals is central to both, even if they have slightly different pathways or theoretical underpinnings.
Okay, this has been really illuminating. It feels like MI offers a very humane and effective way to approach conversations about change.
I think so. The core really is about partnership, acceptance, compassion, and evocation, drawing out what's already within the person. It's guiding, not directing, understanding, not judging, empowering, not forcing.
So, for you listening, as you think about your own goals or maybe interactions you have with colleagues, friends, family who might be considering a change, understanding these MI principles, empathy, exploring motivation, supporting their ability, gives you, well, a different kind of toolkit.
Mm-hmm. Tools for more respectful and potentially more effective conversations.
So here's something to reflect on. Think about a situation maybe recently or in the past where someone was talking about a change, or maybe you were thinking about one. How might that conversation have felt different if the focus was less on giving advice and more on using empathy, asking open questions, and really listening for their reasons, their internal drive?
What might have shifted if the goal was truly to evoke their own motivation rather than installing yours? It's interesting to consider how that shift could foster change that feels more authentic and perhaps more sustainable because it truly comes from within.